This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And there is a dispute right now between the federal government and local governments on how to treat undocumented immigrants. The federal government wants the ability to deport at will and wants the cooperation of local law enforcement to do that. But many communities do not want to create a climate of fear on their streets where every undocumented worker fears anyone in uniform. The challenge, as localities see it, is to embrace undocumented workers, keep the peace, and await some comprehensive immigration reform from Washington. The consequence of this dispute, though, is that sometimes in communities, the federal government knows a lot more about certain undocumented individuals than localities do, and no cooperation means no sharing of information. Earlier this month, 32-year-old Catherine Steinle planned an evening with her father strolling along San Francisco's Embarcadero, a waterfront walkway and major tourist destination. Her plans were cut short when shots rang out around 6:30 that evening, and Catherine was hit in the chest. She died at San Francisco General Hospital later that night. The alleged gunman was Juan Francisco Lopez Sanchez, an undocumented immigrant from Mexico with a long record. Catherine's father, Jim Steinle, who had his arm around his daughter when she was shot, testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee this week.
The alleged murderer is an undocumented immigrant who has been convicted of 7 felonies in the U.S. and already deported 5 times. Yet in March of this year, he was released from jail and allowed to stay here freely because of those legal loopholes.
Legal loopholes, that's what Steinle calls the tension and disagreements between the federal government and state and local governments on immigration policy that he says made his daughter a casualty.
The U.S. has suffered a self-inflicted wound in the murder of our daughter by the hand of a person that should have never been on the streets of this country.
Last fall, the Obama administration put a stop to a program called Secure Communities, a national immigration enforcement program that enlisted the help of local police to aid with the Obama Accelerated Deportation Program. It was unpopular. More than 360 jurisdictions opted out of the program, including San Francisco, where Catherine Steinle was killed. The Priority Enforcement Program, or PEP, is another attempt to get cooperation between the federal government and local communities. So how is it different? And will communities like San Francisco be willing to participate? Joining us now is Mark Rosenblum, Deputy Director of the U.S. Immigration Policy Program at the Migration Policy Institute in Washington. Mark, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me.
So explain to me, first of all, whether there should be cooperation between the federal government and local governments and how you see this dispute or difference of opinion.
Well, you definitely want some level of communication between DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, and local police, because there are so many more local police officers that it's a huge force multiplier for DHS to be able to take custody of people who come in through local law enforcement.
So for all of the complications that the Secure Communities program might have produced on the streets of the communities that opted out, you have to admit that not being able to tip off San Francisco law enforcement about this alleged gunman, Juan Francisco Lopez Sanchez, is an irresponsible consequence.
Right. And actually, the way the program works, the way Secure Communities worked and the way the new PEP works, PEP, is that it's pretty seamlessly integrated into the law enforcement process. So when a local police department arrests somebody and then books them, when they send their fingerprints to the FBI for criminal background checks, DHS automatically gets a copy of those prints, and they can check it against immigration databases and determine if the person is potentially removable and check that against their immigration history and their criminal history to see if it's a priority and the person should be deported.
What is the reaction of communities? And let's just talk about people on the streets who are very inclined to be fearful of people in uniform, but it's not in the interests of communities to have large numbers of people on the street who are literally afraid of people in uniform. You need them to be much more forthcoming to law enforcement. But what do they think the impact of the federal government looking so closely at these communities is?
Right. That's been one of the biggest concerns about Secure Communities, is that because law enforcement gets so seamlessly integrated into immigration control, it really undermines the relationship between police and law-abiding immigrants. And so it prevents police from doing the good community policing that they want to do. So most police chiefs, many police chiefs, have argued that this program has been really bad for public safety. And it's also diverted sort of scarce police resources away from doing crime control and forced them to, you know, spend time and money on holding people for DHS and being involved in immigration enforcement instead.
Do you think it's sustainable to have a policy on the local level which basically says, look, we're going to keep the peace here. We're not going to do any, you know, sweeps in these communities. Please tell us about the really bad apples, and we'll take them off the street. But we're just going to keep the peace until Congress gets their act together. Is that sustainable?
Well, I think what you described is exactly what the Obama administration is trying to do with PEP, is to sort of scale back secure communities, which sort of overshot and became too large a presence and too close of a connection between local law enforcement and DHS. And under PEP, they're trying to focus exclusively on the real bad apples, people who've been convicted of serious crimes or are believed to be a threat to public safety. The other problem with secure communities that PEP tries to address is that it imposes some controls on how people get detained and passed over to Homeland Security to ensure that you're not wrongfully detaining people for whom there's no probable cause that they're removable, and not wrongfully detaining U.S. citizens beyond the, you know, their time in the criminal justice system.
Do you think these changes are likely to turn around San Francisco, which thinks of the sanctuary policy that it's adopted as something that it's very popular, even given the Catherine Steinle murder?
Well, the DHS is really reaching out to individual jurisdictions on a case-by-case basis and trying to find a way to get them to cooperate on these highest priority cases by negotiating specific protocols that they're comfortable with. You know, it just rolled out officially at the beginning of July. So the real test is going to be, is it successful at focusing more narrowly on the administration's enforcement priorities? And that's actually something that you already saw over time with secure communities. Initially, when that program rolled out, most of the people deported through secure communities were non-criminals or people who had been convicted only of very minor offenses. But over time, it got increasingly focused on people who had been convicted of serious crimes. And so hopefully we'll see that's the case with PAP even more so. And I think that would convince cities like San Francisco to find ways to cooperate with DHS.
Mark Rosenblum, Deputy Director of the U.S. Immigration Policy Program at the Migration Policy Institute, speaking to us from Washington, D.C. Thanks so much, Mark.
Thank you.
Let's test that proposition. We go now to Leslie Beristain Rojas, who's Immigration and Emerging Communities Reporter for KPCC in Los Angeles. Leslie, can the federal government pull off this cooperation model with local communities and just wait for reform from Washington without having more shootings like the Catherine Steinle case in the Bay Area? What do you think, Leslie?
Well, they're certainly trying, but I mean, there has been some blowback brewing for a while. And I would say the shooting is really kind of, you know, the blowback really kind of hitting peak right now. You already had some resistance, you know, back some months ago. You know, there were some ICE officials that were complaining that there were people that were, you know, out that they could have had, you know. And I don't know if you remember a situation where they rounded up some people and said these were people that we would have detained otherwise. PEP is in some ways an answer to, for example, California's Trust Act, which took effect last year, that was setting boundaries as to how states and ultimately local governments cooperate with ICE. They were saying, okay, well, you're going to ask us for detainers. We'll hand over people who meet a certain bar. So PEP is in some ways trying to replicate what the state and what other jurisdictions were doing in response to secure communities. So we'll see. But, you know, you're going to get some resistance even to PEP. Even the advocates call it PEPCOM because, of course, at the outset, as Mark was explaining, the fingerprint system is still happening. People are still getting identified at the beginning. It's still going to DHS. The difference is at the tail end.
What's the possibility that this whole thing will be exploited by interests both within ICE and within local communities to take these outlier cases like the Catherine Steinle case, which is very unfortunate and tragic, but use it to basically paint the entire program as impossible to maintain, and that suddenly it's a sort of a stockade mentality between the federal government and these localities?
Well, interesting that you mention that right now, of course, in Los Angeles County, supervisors are still kind of out as to how much, to what degree they're going to participate in PEP, right? So the County Board of Supervisors used to have a program called 287G. LA and Orange counties were the last two counties in the state, really, that had this older program in which basically, they allowed the federal government to deputize deputies to go into the jails and actually do in-person screenings for people's immigration status. Inmates, these were people who the county argued could be missed by the secure communities database model, right? So there's a very heated debate about that locally. And in the end, county supervisors voted 3-2 to do away with 287G and just go ahead and implement PEP, gave the sheriff's department 90 days to seek input, hold community meetings with a report back in August. At that point, they're going to determine how closely they cooperate with the federal government with PEP. It was a heated debate back then, but not nearly as heated as it is now. So yes, you know, in the most recent meeting after the San Francisco shooting, you had lots of people who were turning out. And, you know, these are activists that had already been vocal, but became much more vocal with many more people joining their numbers, saying that the county needs to, in fact, you know, implement maximum cooperation. And I spoke with a deputy for one supervisor yesterday who said, yes, that's what he's going to push for. So we may see this becoming much more of a debate when it comes in August to decide how much the county can cooperate with the federal government or not. As you know, PEP does give local jurisdictions more leeway as to just exactly how closely they want to work with federal government.
But within that leeway, because of the Steinle case, the pendulum may be swinging the other way, as you've seen it there down in Southern California. Leslie, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Leslie Berenstein-Rojas is immigration and emerging communities reporter for KPCC in Los Angeles, trying to assess the question of how sustainable is cooperation between the federal government and localities while all of those interests wait for Congress to act on immigration reform.